Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, the natural world, and most importantly, love. Hello, friends, and thank you so much for joining me for this Fat Feminist Witch Valentine's Day spectacular. Isn't that fun? So last year for Valentine's Day, we talked about sextrology, both the book by Starsky and Cox, and also some places that love and sex show up in your own personal astrology. This year, we're continuing that a little bit, so I'm reviewing Astrology for Real Relationships by Jessica Lignato and Crystal Healing and Sacred Pleasure by Vanessa Cuccia, and I'm sharing the epic tale of the love of Eros, aka Cupid, and Psyche, and also discussing what their asteroid counterparts mean in your birth chart. Finally, I'll be sharing a self-love ritual from my upcoming book, Green Witchcraft, which is currently available. The ebook edition you can just buy and start reading, and you can also pre-order the paperback before it goes on sale on Tuesday, February 25th, which is also Mardi Gras, aka Fat Tuesday. How perfect is that? My book comes out on Fat Tuesday. I mean, of all the holidays. I was a little disappointed it couldn't come out on the 29th. It's a leap year, right? I thought that would be really fun. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's fine. And then yesterday I was just kind of looking at my calendar and, you know, 25th, oh, cool, book release day, Mardi Gras. And I freaked out. So I'm very excited about that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about it at the end of the show. Super fun. So let's dig into our topic today and, you know, get a little lovey-dovey up in here. So let's start with our Grecian, you know, our star-crossed lovers, Eros and Psyche. For those unfamiliar with Greek and Roman mythology, there is a bit of an overlap. Names change and things like that. So some of you may recognize Eros more by his Roman name of Cupid, who was the god of love and sex and desire. You know, he was the very handsome winged god with the little bow and arrow. Sometimes he was depicted as a tiny child or, you know, like an adolescent. There are a few different versions of this story, and those of you who are familiar with Greek and Roman mythology know that origin stories and parentage are constantly being rewritten in these things. So this is just one version of the story, and I totally encourage you to read others because it's a good story no matter what. So the tale actually begins with Psyche. This beautiful mortal woman who, through no fault of her own, incurred the wrath of Aphrodite, or Venus, the goddess of love and beauty. Psyche was the youngest of three princesses. They were all beautiful, but Psyche's beauty was something otherworldly, ethereal, you know, not so humanly. The people in her kingdom were so taken with her that they kind of began to talk about her as the second coming of Venus, claiming she was just as beautiful as Aphrodite, and eventually began to almost worship her over Aphrodite. They let her temples, you know, just fall into disrepair or stopped using them, and they focused their creepy, lusty eyes on the young Psyche instead. Now, you think that this otherworldly, beautiful young woman would have a line of suitors vying for her hand, and indeed she did, at first. Her beauty was so intense that men were intimidated by it, and just assumed that they'd never be worthy, and so eventually no one came asking for poor, lonely Psyche anymore. Her other sisters, who were still very beautiful by us, you know, lowly humans by earthly standards, both had husbands and were living the lives they were told they were supposed to live in their palaces and, you know, doing what Grecian women did back then. And if you were rich, it was very little. So despite the fact that Psyche had no role in this odd worship she inspired in the people in her kingdom and was actually a little uncomfortable about it, Aphrodite decided that she had to go and hatched a plan. Meanwhile, Psyche's father was distraught, both over the fact that Psyche, you know, wasn't fulfilling her duties by becoming a wife and a queen, but also that his lovely daughter, who he really loved, was lonely and lost. She had nothing going in her life. Back then, women didn't do a lot, especially if they were rich. So what would she do if she was, you know, a spinster? So he traveled to the Oracle of Delphi at the Temple of Apollo and asked her what was to be done with Psyche. Now, the oracle was a conduit between gods and man and delivered the word of the gods in a way that humans could understand, quote unquote, but it was usually in the form of prophecy, which required interpretation sometimes, of course. Now, no one knows for sure, right? Because none of us were there, but we can all be pretty sure, based on what the oracle tells this king, that Aphrodite had a little something to do with it behind the scenes. The king was told that Psyche was to be dressed for her wedding and brought out to a lonely, jagged rock by the sea where a gigantic monster would claim her and be her husband, and she would never be seen again. Yikes, right? The king's not happy about it, but a godly decree is a godly decree. They were fairly pious when it comes to the Olympians here. And so Psyche is dressed in a white gown and a veil, and she carries lilies, which are the flower for funerals, right? And she is taken by procession. All of the people, like, follow her, and it's awful. And she's taken to this desolate rocky crag and left to wait for this hideous beast. And Psyche knows what's coming. She's just sitting there, you know, waiting to either die and be gobbled up by this monster or have to be taken and marry him. And either way, it's not so good. But Aphrodite had enlisted the help of her son, Eros, the winged god of love and desire, to shoot Psyche with one of his arrows so that she would fall in love with this hideous slithering beast. Though she does not ask him to make sure that the beast loves her in return. So either way, she's in love with a hideous beast, and the beast doesn't even love her back. That's not a nice life. But when Eros sees Psyche on this rock alone, beautiful, crying, and about to throw herself to her death, he's kind of shocked and taken aback, and he accidentally scratches himself on one of his arrows, and he falls madly in love with this damsel in distress. So instead of shooting her or killing her, he has the west wind, Zephyr, carry her instead to a beautiful but completely empty meadow. There's no people there. Psyche is exhausted and afraid, and she kind of passes out. She falls asleep. And when she wakes up, her surroundings, her setting has kind of changed. She's now at the edge of this lush grove. And beyond the grove, she can see that there's a city or a palace or something. So she sets off to figure out what's going on and maybe find some help. When she enters this palace that she finds, it is empty again. But she gets this strange feeling that this palace was meant for her. Everything there is to her liking. It's all in a style that she loves, and it's just obviously made to appeal to her specifically. A disembodied voice tells her that everything is okay, and to make herself comfortable, to eat the incredible feast that she finds in the dining hall. The feast serves itself, and, you know, there are unmanned instruments playing music so beautiful you'd think Orpheus himself was at the lyra, but she's alone. She goes with it. I mean, Psyche is naive, but also, like I said, this is really what she was expecting a bit, and there's no slithering creature, so maybe it's a step up. When nighttime comes, there are no candles or lamps in the palace, and it is dark, pitch black dark. Suddenly, the voice returns, and it's right next to her, telling her that everything is okay, and she feels someone taking her hand. The invisible suitor leads Psyche to a bedchamber, because Greek mythology, though beautiful, is also gross. And he tells her he is her new husband, and that it's time to consummate their new marriage. Though she's afraid, she knows that this is the will of the gods, and she knew that this was part of the deal. Not great. Submits. She actually finds the beast surprisingly tender. And when he professes his love, she genuinely believes him. Now, I'm not saying I think that that qualifies as consent. I'm just telling you the story. Just want to say that. Greek mythology is very rapey. So, you know, she believes that he loves her and he's tender. It's not the worst possible thing that could have happened. But when Psyche wakes up in the morning, the beast, the husband, is gone. And the palace is empty once again. And the days and the nights continue this way. So at night, Psyche and her husband are together. They have sex, of course, but they also talk and they share a little bit about themselves and they have a pretty good time, actually. She starts to really look forward to nighttime when he'll be there. Especially because in the daytime, no one is there. The palace is magical and it takes care of her needs for her. There's no one else with her. The only thing that the husband will not do for her, will not share, is his face. He tells Psyche he'll only be with her after darkness falls and makes her swear she'll never try to look upon his face, never try to see what he looks like. And she agrees. The days and the nights, you know, they pass this way for some time. She's all alone. And she is just as lonely as she always was. So she begs and she pleads with her husband one night to allow her sisters to come to visit in the daytime to keep her company. It takes her a while to convince him, but he relents and has Zephyr fly them in first class for, you know, a daytime play date. Fun. Now, I'm sure it's no surprise to learn that Psyche's sisters had always been a little bit jealous of her beauty. The jealousy was held back by the fact that, you know, everything was going fine for them. They had rich, handsome prince husbands and nice palaces to live in, and everything was going exactly the way it was supposed to. But of course, it was nothing compared to the exquisite, enchanted palace owned and operated unbeknownst to them by the god of love and desire. You gotta think that he's got some really good, you know, decorating skills. They knew that the oracle had foretold that she would be married to a hideous and disgusting beast of a creature. So when she told them her husband didn't, you know, feel like a beast in her hands, and that he was actually pretty good company, and as long as she swore to never look at his face, everything was great. Well, her sisters began, you know, in the words of Shakespeare, to pour that pestilence of jealousy into her ear. You know, how do you know what he is? What if you get pregnant? What will your child be? How do you know you like being with him if you can't see him at all? I know I would never live like that. How can you be so naive, Psyche? That's messed up. You should trick him. You should look at him while he's sleeping. Now, I'm not saying the sisters are totally wrong, but their intentions were bad. And they got into her head, this poor girl. So that night, after the sisters were gone, and her husband had fallen asleep after they'd had, a roll in the hay, Psyche lit an oil lamp and carefully held it over her husband just to sneak a peek at the beast. And instead, of course, found the most gorgeous and symmetrical golden god of a man in existence with, you know, brilliant golden wings. This was a lot to handle. Looking on the gods, the goddesses, is a lot for humans to handle in general. And of course, this was very shocking because she thought she knew this man or this person or this beast. And as she was trying to sneak away and put out the lamp, she pricked herself on one of Eros's arrows and spilled hot oil onto his chest, right above the heart, right there. He woke up screaming, and when he realized her deception, he fled the palace. He flew right away, left her. Psyche, both confused, and now also desperately in love thanks to that magical arrow, tried to chase after him, but he was gone. When she left the palace to check the grounds, it disappeared. And suddenly she found herself all alone again on that jagged rock where she'd first waited for her beastly husband to come get her. She began to wander, trying to figure out what to do next. She traveled to the temple of Demeter, who's the goddess of grain and growth. It's Persephone's mother. And she found the temple just kind of in disarray. Apparently, she was a pretty conscientious young woman, and she straightened up, she lit the lamps, she discarded any of the wasted or spoiled offerings, and just, you know, made sure that everything was good. She was fairly pious, and she really believed in worshiping the gods and goddesses. No doubt she was also sobbing the entire time. So Demeter was touched, and though she didn't do this a lot, she showed up in person. She actually appeared right there in front of Psyche. And this poor girl threw herself on the mercy of this loving mother goddess. You know, she just wanted help so bad. And although Demeter really, really wanted to help her and truly believed that Psyche deserved help, she knew that she could not go against a fellow goddess, let alone her own niece, right? They're all related on Olympus. So she offered her some comfort and told her instead to travel to the temple of Hera. Hera's the queen of the gods and the goddess of marriage. Surely she has a little bit more sway and could help. Unfortunately, just like Demeter, Hera, though she takes pity on Psyche, can't fix things for her. She can't fix things. She can't bring Eros back. She can't bring her back to this old life that she'd had for a small amount of time. But what she does do is tell her why her life has gone the way it has. Up until this point, Psyche had no idea that Aphrodite was so goddamn mad, had no idea. So she tells her that you have to go to Aphrodite and make a plea directly to her for some mercy. Well, fuck. It's so much, especially because, like, they don't have cars. She's walking everywhere. Greece is a pretty big place. It sucks. So when she gets there to Aphrodite's temple, Aphrodite herself shows up, of course. And the goddess, who can be kind of a bitch, revels in having Psyche beg for forgiveness, right? And after a few days of physical and emotional abuse, she starts giving her tasks to do to kind of earn favor, right? So first, her first trial in order to win her freedom and even maybe her husband back, is to sort grain. And that sounds wacky, right? Sounds wacky. But it gets a little bit wild from this point. First, Eros was, strangely enough, genuinely wounded by that hot oil that had been dripped onto his chest, right over his heart. That's not normal. A god shouldn't be wounded by a human with oil. You know what I mean? They don't actually get hurt. What's happening? It continued to burn for some time and eventually left him, a god, with a scar. So he was holed up in Aphrodite's palace and she had been watching over her. And in his, you know, delirium of pain, he was kind of watching everything Psyche went through and was pouting because he felt betrayed. You know, he had asked her one thing, just one thing, and she couldn't even do that one thing. Whatever. Let her do her trials and sort her grains, right? Not a big deal. So it's the first trial. She's locked in a dungeon. She's got a bag of rice, poppy seeds, beans, grains, lentils, chickpeas, all sorts of different beans and rice and grains and seeds. And told that she has to sort them all by morning. And this is a massive pile. This would be completely impossible. There are not enough hours in a single night to complete this task. She knew it was impossible. Psyche knew that. But she got to work. What else she gonna do, right? She kept going through the tears and the sobs and was really trying to sort it. And her devotion to this really stupid and impossible task touched the heart of an ant who was crawling through her cell. And the ant assembles a fleet of insects to help her sort it. She's incredibly grateful, and together they have it all finished by the time Aphrodite returns home drunk from a feast in the morning. And she was mad. She didn't expect Psyche to complete this. She could have just, you know, lopped off her head at that point. But now Psyche actually completed something. I want to point out here that Psyche kept the fact that bugs had helped her a secret because she knew Aphrodite would wipe them all out. I just think that's a very nice little detail because Psyche does appear to have a very good heart. She appears to be a very, like, conscientious person. So I like to point that part out. So her second trial, she has to travel to a meadow where the golden sheep of the sun god Helios go to graze. These sheep, by the way, unfortunately, are murderously violent. Like, if any human gets anywhere near them, they'll just be stomped and torn to shreds. And she has to go and collect their golden wool, of course. This is, again, an impossible task. And on the way, Psyche considers throwing herself into a river. She's just had enough. But all of a sudden, a magical reed, the kind that is used to make, you know, musical instruments, tells her that all is not lost. There's a trick here. The sheep regularly lose clumps of wool on the thrones of a briar patch at the edge of the meadow. They're not always over there, and it's not always in eyesight of the sheep. And Psyche can safely harvest the wool with just, you know, some scrapes and scratches from the thorns, instead of being murdered by vicious golden sheep. Psyche's resolve is renewed, you know, she's got hope now, and she returns to Aphrodite with the golden wool. And oh man, Aphrodite is mad. Again, Psyche doesn't tell her how she got it. So her next trial is to climb to the top of an outrageously high and steep mountain to collect the, there's a spring up there, and the brackish water that flows from the spring feeds the rivers of the underworld, Styx and Cocytus. Even if she makes it to the top of this mountain, which she was pretty sure wouldn't happen, the high altitude is something that a mortal can't really survive. There's not enough air up there. Psyche climbs higher than any mortal ever has, and she's struggling the whole time and losing air, busting herself up really bad. She considers suicide again. But Zeus, the king of the gods, the rapist with an apparent heart of gold in these stories, bizarre, just cannot fucking watch this anymore. And like the other goddesses she talked to, he's just like, oh, this is really hard to watch. You know, this is bad. He sends his eagle, he's got himself a nice big old eagle, to fetch the vial from Psyche, to fill it with water and to, you know, to bring it back. At this point, Aphrodite's had it, and she's sick of doing this. So she sends Psyche on her final trial to go into the underworld with a golden box and to return with some of Persephone's beauty. No mortal can go into the underworld and survive. For us humans, death is a one-way street, right? Psyche knew this. She knew that she would never, never come back. For a moment, yet again, she considers jumping off of a tower. She is just so miserable. Psyche is so miserable, and she just keeps feeling like there's no hope. It's never ending. But this disembodied voice from the tower, doesn't that sound familiar? Gives her hope and also gives her some tips, you know, some instructions on how to get in and out of the underworld. So Psyche took cakes that were soaked in drugged wine to feed to Cerberus, the three-headed dog. I love this. I love the idea that she gave this three-headed puppy dog treats and no doubt a tiny little belly rub so that he would fall asleep. I love it. I love it. She also takes two coins hidden in her mouth to pay Charon the ferryman for a return trip across the River Styx. I didn't know there was a fare for a return trip, but I think that's fun. Finally, she's told once she comes back up into the world of living, she must not open that box under any circumstances, no matter how bad she wants to. So Psyche does this. She gets through the underworld. You know, Cerberus is taking a snooze and Charon's like, yeah, you know what? I'll totally wait for you. I'll be here when you for your return trip. And she gets to the palace where Hades and Persephone live, and she was sure she was doomed. You know, they didn't have to let her leave. They didn't have to do anything. A swipe of their hand, and she was dead, and it was over. But, I mean, Persephone had heard about this epic drama from Demeter, who had taken, you know, pity on Psyche, who was touched by her kindness and conscientiousness in the temple. So Persephone had been keeping an eye on her throughout the underworld, just, you know, seeing how it's going. When Psyche told Persephone that she needed some of her beauty to bring to Aphrodite, the queen of the underworld was touched. She was considered so beautiful. And she could hear the sincerity in Psyche's voice. She wasn't just making this request for Aphrodite. Psyche genuinely believed that Persephone was beautiful. So the queen breathed into the box and allowed Psyche to leave. When she reached the surface, it was like the contents of that box started to call to her. Oh, the Greek gods love this shit, right? It's very Pandora. And she starts thinking, she starts ruminating, you know, she's still terribly depressed. She can't believe she got through there. What's going to happen now? What new trial am I going to have to go through? And she started to think, maybe if I use some of Persephone's beauty, maybe if I become more beautiful even than Aphrodite, Eros will love me. He'll show up. He'll help me. He'll put an end to this. So she opened the box and she fell into a very deep sleep. She was as if the living dead. It sounds familiar, right? Fairy tales are so fun. There's only like four, but every country uses them. So I'm sure by now that you figured out that Eros had been secretly kind of sending aid to Psyche through these trials. So after seeing how the ants and the insects and their help got Psyche through that first one, he started, you know, sending these instructions through these third parties. You know, he was so sure that he would send her instructions. He would never have to show up. She would never have to look on him. And she would make it back and give his mother the box. Everything would be okay. She will prove that she loved him. She will have earned Aphrodite's favor. And they could go back to their palace and be happy in the dark. But not only is the call of ultimate beauty a strong one, even for the beautiful, but Psyche was already not in such a great place. Her psyche was a little bit shattered. I don't know what you expect when you get beauty from the queen of the underworld. But, I mean, she was dead now. That's pretty sad. Eros finally shows up. She's dead. His help is not helping. And he wakes her up with a kiss. Literally, fairy tale style. And together they go to Olympus. And Eros tells Zeus and Aphrodite that not only is he done with this, but Psyche is done. She's completed her trials. She's finished. And now he and Psyche want to get married for real, which means that Psyche has to become a goddess. Now, a lot of the gods, as you've heard, are pretty uncomfortable with how hard Aphrodite was going at this girl. They didn't love it. So Zeus relented. He gave Psyche ambrosia, the food of the gods, and she became immortal. At this point, Aphrodite's pretty impressed by how much this woman seemed to care for her son. And she realized that, you know, if none of that worked, nothing was going to work. And so Psyche became the goddess of the soul and its epic journey through life and love, and also the goddess of relationships at a higher spiritual level. So, like, soulmates are her domain. Her and Eros ended up having a daughter named Voluptas, who was the goddess of pleasure. And man, do I wish we had more mythology about Voluptas, because she sounds like my kind of goddess, right? Like most Greek myths, this story has its issues. Feminism wasn't really like a thing in ancient Greece, and consensual sex was just not a right that women had. Horrifying. So that's something you kind of have to get past with all of the stories from ancient Greece, unfortunately. But the lessons in there that it has about love and life and growth are very important. Now, if you look at the story very simply, this fairy tale princess needed to go through hell for a man that she only loved because of magic after seeing him one time. And in the end, that love is what defines her and earns her the right to be happy. Growth. When you look closer, though, you see that Psyche's trials were a lot less about her love for Eros. I mean, she was doing it for that reason, but none of those trials meant anything to Eros. He wasn't considered at all. Those were about Aphrodite and about Psyche. It was more about herself. It was more about proving to herself what she wanted. It was more about growing up and learning to do new things and learning to connect with people. Psyche had never been happy. Never been happy. She was lonely all the time. She was born into an unhappy and lonely life. She was lonely in her own kingdom, and then she was lonely all day when she was with Eros. And she'd been lonely, wandering around by herself ever since. But along the way, there was always someone or something there to offer support and to tell her to make a choice about what she wanted. You know, it was never, oh my God, you can't kill yourself. It's, you could jump into this river or this ocean, but I could help you if you want. Some of those times it was Eros guiding her, assuming that just sending the message through the third party would protect her and she'd prevail. But in the end, it did not, and she died. Psyche wasn't really saved. Her trials were not over until he physically showed up and revealed himself to her for the very first time. Eros focused so hard on the way he believed Psyche betrayed him. You know, he only made one request. You had one job. But his request was unreasonable. It was also selfish. Eros was afraid that she would fall in love with his identity, you know, as the god of desire instead of him. So he kept his identity a secret. This wasn't fair to Psyche at all. He never gave her the chance to feel any sort of way. He just assumed that she would go in the direction of vanity. He also assumed that she'd be perfectly happy with a fancy magical palace that was completely empty and full of no people. Because that's what people like, right? They like magic. And she wouldn't notice the loneliness. But if he knew Psyche for real on the inside, he would have known that that would never make her truly happy. Even without those sisters chatting in her ears, Psyche eventually would have gotten tired of the loneliness, and she would have done something about it. Not only that, but I mean, of all people, Psyche would understand people thinking they know and love you based solely on your appearance. Psyche would understand how lonely that is and how much that hurts. But he never gave her the chance. He decided who he wanted Psyche to see as her husband, and he created that person. But in love, you have to be vulnerable, and you have to expose yourself. That's what makes love scary, but it's also what makes love real. Psyche, for her part, I mean, she didn't ask any questions without prodding. Like, she naively accepted these things. She maybe thought about them for a second, but she never had any agency or control over her own life. Why start now? Yeah, sure, I'll never look at your face, but we can have sex every night. Bizarre. But hey, she never thought she deserved to ask for any more. Psyche gave up a lot throughout her journey. She gave up all the time. She contemplated suicide multiple times. And in some versions of the tale, she tried it, but like a river god or something would push her out of the river. So sad. And the whole time, she just kept focusing, you know, refocusing. I'm doing this for him. If I do this, he'll love me. I'm going to get him back. I just have to. And we're going to go back to our palace, this relationship we had. It was totally perfect. And thinking that is eventually what did her in. I mean, she didn't need to be more beautiful for him to love her. That's absurd. That's nuts. She absolutely didn't need that. That would not have made a difference at all. She was still thinking that that relationship that they had had, the one built on illusion, was what was best. But it's not. What was best was for her to have her own power and to choose to be with Eros as equals, which she eventually did. Eros didn't just drag her up to Olympus. They had to talk it out for a little while. That's just not a super fun part of the story. Sexuality and desire are very important parts of romantic relationships for many people out there. for some kinds of relationships, they're the only part that really matters. And, you know, that's okay, as long as everyone knows. Some relationships, they're not a part of it at all. And, of course, that's also okay. But for a lot of us, when it comes to having a balanced relationship with somebody, you have to be equals. You have to have your own power and agency. And you have to have other types of intimacy and connection, whether you are sexual with them or not. You have to be vulnerable. You have to share your ugly parts, or I mean, your really beautiful parts, I guess. You have to trust your partner, and you have to take that risk that things won't work out. You also have to put in some hard work, work that totally sucks. There's a little bit of it in there. You have to heal some wounds that may stick around for a while, especially ones that are unexpected might stick around for a while. And you have to give each other room to grow separately, and you also have to grow together. Now, I'm not of the mind that everyone is half a soul looking for their one single perfect half. But I think we do connect with others on a soul level, a soulular level, if you will. Everyone's soul is on its own journey through this life before we move on to, you know, whatever comes next. Some other souls we encounter help us along. Some create obstacles. And some souls, I mean, they just don't have a very long starring role in your drama. And that's okay. Finding someone that enriches your soul and encourages you along your soul's journey is what I think of when I hear the word soulmate. Like many Greek myths, the tale of Psyche and Eros was used as inspiration for the names of a couple of asteroids in our solar system and in our birth charts. So the sign and house placement of Psyche and Eros in our birth charts can point to the ways we express and grow through love and desire and sexuality and life, you know, our soul's journey. Psyche is the asteroid of our relations with our soul, our mind, and our sense of self, and the ways that we bring that together. Psyche can also tell us about the things that we expect out of relationships, the things that we put into relationships, and what love in relationships means to us as an individual. It can also point to some of the ways that you may lose yourself in a relationship, or how you're not asking for what you want, how you're expressing your desires might not be quite in line with what you want. So it's great to look at both the sign and the house of Psyche there to kind of see how well you know yourself and your soul. So if you're looking for the asteroid in your chart and using an online calculator, Psyche's asteroid is number 16. Now Eros, who is number 433, by the way, as the god of kind of sexual love and desire, his asteroid can point to things that you desire in the sexual parts of a relationship. It can explain ways that you express intimacy through physical contact and through sexuality. It can explain how you feel passion, how you feel desire, the kinds of things that you desire. It can also point to ways that you are holding yourself back in a relationship, or ways that you can be more vulnerable and reveal more of yourself in a relationship, or even why that's difficult for you if it is. When you're looking at compatibility, you can compare these signs with your partner and kind of go in the opposite way. So see what your Psyche sign is and their Eros sign and how they mesh, and the other way around as well, to kind of see the two different parts of that relationship and how they work, if they're compatible, and if there are things that you guys need to watch out for or ways that you need to support each other. If you want to find your Psyche and Eros signs, I will put a link in the description with a little bit of instructions on how you can find kind of these extended asteroids in your chart. So this year, I got a really beautiful oracle deck called the Arcana of Astrology. And even if you haven't heard of it, I know you've seen it because it's very Instagrammable. So this deck is an absolute beauty, but I have been kind of frustrated with it because, like a lot of other oracle decks, it doesn't come with like very vast instructions, right? They're very, very simple. And with the Arcana of Astrology, you really just get these little keywords and archetypes. So for Psyche, our archetype was the goddess, and her keyword was passion. And to me, that's, that doesn't really encompass everything about Psyche. And with Eros, we have the lover and its desire and erotic love. So while it says a little bit about what you can kind of expect, it doesn't go into detail. So I have been working with the deck myself and trying to come up with more broad little notes that I can have with me, more keywords and more kind of divinatory meanings if I get that card. So I thought that I would share that with you in case you guys get a couple of these cards coming up in your readings, and it'll also help you understand the actual astrological part of these asteroids a little bit more. So the keywords for Psyche are passion, the soul, psychology, knowing the mind, self, and soul as one, trust issues, your trust of other people, especially partners, jealousy and betrayal, considering what love means to you, immortality through love, like carrying on through love, the journey of your soul, and the places and times that you might really want to give up, the things that kind of bring you to that point. Can also indicate losing yourself in a relationship or the things that make you attractive to the world. So divinatory meanings could be that this thing you've asked about is part of your soul's journey, or it could be recommending that you focus on spiritual intimacy, making more of a spiritual connection with somebody. It could be telling you to ask for what you need, or that you're giving too much and not getting enough in return. It could indicate that there's a lack of trust in your relationship, or it could mean that there is a challenge coming up, but it's worth conquering. Finally, it's got some great messages like, this is something that will help your soul grow. It's time for you to nourish your spiritual side, and you are learning to recognize yourself as a separate entity. You may still have to grow outside of the relationship, or it could be telling you that you have a very nice balance going on. With Eros, we have the keywords erotic love, passion, desire, sexual objectification, and creative passion. So some of your divinatory meanings there are, you could express this feeling through sexuality. It's time for you to be vulnerable, let your walls down, you're holding back. It could be a message to just give in to passion or to sexual desire. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You may want to consider a little bit about how you express love, especially when it comes to sexuality or physical intimacy. And it could be asking you to ask questions about your relationship, like, are you making unreasonable requests? Are you holding yourself back? Is this really love or is this lust? Think about how you actually feel and if you two are on an equal footing. Now, if you are asking kind of bluntly, if you and your partner have connected on this soul level and you get Psyche, I would say that you are either making that connection, you are on your way, or you've already done that. If you get Eros, I would say that you still have work to do or that it's just not happening. That's kind of how I've been reading those cards. So just in case you guys are using the Arcana of Astrology and looking for a little bit of extended meaning, those are the ones that I have written down for myself. We talk a lot about mental health here on the show, and I guess more specifically, the barriers that I came up against when I was seeking out treatment for my mental illness. I've also been very fortunate to share the strides that I've made since then and the support that I was able to find. Sharing that with you showed me just how important it is to be able to talk about what you're going through and to get support from someone or many someones who care. That's why I'm proud to have BetterHelp as one of the sponsors of the show. BetterHelp is an online service that can connect you with real licensed therapists who can be available to talk on your schedule and right where you are. They have 4 different ways to communicate: text, chat, phone, and video calls. And there are professionals with a wide range of specialties. So there's a really good chance that you can find someone who's perfect for you, all without having to leave home. Everything's confidential. If you ever feel like your counselor is just not the right fit for you, you can switch right away. There's no charge. The service is very affordable compared to in-person therapy, and they even offer financial aid for those who need it. It's okay to need help sometimes. You deserve to get better. And you can start that journey at betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch to save 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch. Oh my God, witches. Did you hear? I wrote a book. Green Witchcraft, a practical guide to discovering the magic of plants, herbs, crystals, and beyond, is coming out February 25th, 2020. And until then, you can pre-order it anywhere online or where you physically buy books. Green Witchcraft is all about incorporating the natural world into your practice and into your life, creating a relationship with the earth. I also go through 15 flowers, 15 plants, herbs, trees, and crystals that you can use in your practice. And in every chapter, I have exercises and spells and recipes that you can use to put some of those things to good use. So February 25th, friends, mark it on your calendar. Green Witchcraft by Paige Vanderbeck will be available. So let's keep going with our love astrology, but let's shift our focus back to our main planets and their signs. I've got a great book on relationship astrology for you guys to check out, and it got a 5 crystal ball rating. I'm telling you that right now. So this is Astrology for Real Relationships by Jessica Lagnato, which is, oh, she is one of my favorite astrologers lately. And this book was incredibly good. So it's described as a modern, inclusive guide to astrology that will illuminate your love life as well as your relationships with your family, your friends, and yourself. And that is most definitely what you find in this book. I listen to Jessica's podcast all the time on Sundays. It's called Ghost of a Podcast. And I sit there with my personalized astrological planner by Honeycomb Collective. I think I mentioned that a couple episodes back. And I take notes next to all the transits that she mentions in the like weekly look at astrology. And it's just become my like favorite little Sunday ritual. So I got her book as soon as it was released in January. And I am so glad I did because I loved it. And I loved all of it, not just the parts that applied to me and my sign. So that tells you it's a pretty good book already because I am pretty self-centered. So it got 5 crystal balls, which means I have 5 reasons for you why it earned that auspicious rating. So first, we have that she covers all the planets in signs and houses. So it's not just your sun sign or even your sun and Venus and Mars signs, but all of the main planets. So you have your sun sign, which is your sense of self, but then you also have the moon, which is your feelings, Mercury, which is how you think and communicate, Venus is how you romantically express yourself and your concept of value, Mars is what you do, it's action. Jupiter is how you intend to grow. Saturn is what you think is possible or realistic. Uranus is about how you seek to break away and be free. Neptune is where you're escapist or idealistic. And Pluto is your relationship to trauma, healing, destruction, and rebirth. Not only do you get a more detailed look at yourself and your chart, obviously, but you rarely see the kind of heavy outer planets like Pluto mentioned in books on relationships. But trauma and healing can be a huge part of the entire process. So I really liked having that overall view of your chart. She also covers 3 different types of relationships. We have friends and chosen family, hanging out and dating, and long-term relationships. And then she goes into how each planet in each sign and house works for each kind of relationship. I mean, how extensive is that? I love this. Because often when you see relationships, especially something like relationship astrology, that usually just means romantic. But there are tons of different kinds of relationships that matter to us. This also makes it more accessible to people who don't have any sort of romantic or sexual relationships, but still want to connect with others in a deep and intimate way. I liked seeing how each placement worked just a little differently in each type of relationship. So even just, you know, my sun in Capricorn, the information about how sun in Capricorn presents itself was different in each section because astrology is just a lot more multidimensional than a lot of people think. So Jessica's progressive attitude toward relationships extends further and includes queer and non-binary people and a feminist perspective in every single section. And if you follow Jessica's work, this is something that's ever present, you know, her devotion to a more progressive view of sex and gender and love and society. She shies away from saying things like women do this and men do this, even if they're the same sign. And instead, she writes with everyone in mind. She also mentions polyamorous and non-monogamous relationships for those of you who are into that. So all of this just frames the kind of advice you're going to get in a different way. You know, all sorts of regular issues like cheating and desire and love and loyalty, they all kind of mean something differently now than they used to. So they all change in a little bit of ways that make it more open to your personal context and experiences and what kind of relationship you are actually in. The best thing about it, straight up, is that Jessica's voice is fun. She has a very distinct voice and personality, and it comes through in the book in every single section on every single page. It was, honestly, a very fun book to read. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I get a little bit self-centered when I'm reading astrology books and I'll flip to my own sign and kind of ignore the others. So I'm an asshole, I guess. But I found myself reading all of it. I really enjoyed it all the way through. She's super funny. She makes jokes and she uses her fun, silly slang. And I heard like half of the book in her voice rather than my own internal voice because it's just, it really comes through. And this is neat because it can be hard sometimes to be funny and be silly and still present yourself as an authority on the subject. It honestly can be. But it's clear throughout the book that she's been doing this a while and she really is an expert. She very much knows what she's talking about. It's fun and it's silly, but it still gives you very good, serious advice. Capricorns are not as stuffy and uptight as people think, okay? They are absolutely just as boss, though, so there's that. Now, I love how fun it was. I love her voice. But really, my favorite thing about the book is that at its core, it's about self-love. It's about learning more about yourself and who you are and what you want and how you can be yourself and express that to others. She also makes it clear that loving yourself perfectly and completely isn't some sort of like admission price for sex and love and human connection. We're worthy of love at any point throughout our soul's journey. The concept of losing oneself in a relationship or in the personality of the other person in that relationship comes up many times. And this is a super important lesson. This is why I thought this book worked so well with the story we're talking about of Psyche and Eros. It really talks about how you can continue to work on yourself and to care about yourself and do what's best for you while also connecting with and doing what's good for other people. It's about that kind of balance. So all of those things make this book more than, you know, just a fun romp through sexy astrology, although there is that stuff in there too, because that stuff's fun. It's a book about understanding yourself and healing and finding ways to connect with others that will enrich your life and the journey of your soul. So I highly recommend it. I highly recommend it to anyone looking to learn about love astrology or just astrology in general. You do not need to be well-versed in the subject of astrology to read and love the book. If you know nothing beyond your sun sign, I mean, you'll know a lot more by the end of the book, but I didn't find it daunting. I didn't find it went into details that no one but professional astrologers would know. So it offered you a lot of information without offering far too much and confusing you. It's very easy to digest. Plus, if you are queer or gender nonconforming or in relationships just kind of outside of the one man plus one woman plus sex equals babies paradigm, this is a book where you can actually see yourself and see your partner or partners represented. So I really, really like it. There are lots of great books about astrology of love and sex and relationships. But so far, this one is very unique in the way that it's laid out, in its approach, and how extensively it brings in the energy of all of the planets in your birth chart. So, highly recommend Astrology for Real Relationships by Jessica Lanyado. since we are on the topic of self-love, and with tomorrow being Valentine's Day on a Friday, which is sacred to Venus or Aphrodite, also Freya, if you enjoy the Norse pantheon, I wanted to share a ritual that you can do whether you're in a relationship or not to show yourself some love and kind of celebrate the emotional vibe of this time of year. So this ritual is pretty simple. The only magical item that you really, really need is roses. Now, I'm sure you're not surprised to hear me say roses. You know, they are the official flower of love. And within magic, not only are they perfect for love spells, but roses are intensely spiritual. They're about spiritual healing. They have the highest spiritual vibration of, you know, any other living thing on the planet. They work with all of our chakras. They work to balance our chakras and to open them up, but of course, especially the heart. They're great for encouraging healthy relationships. You can use them in dream magic, protection, purification, cleansing, and blessing. That's why you find them in a lot of smoke wands that you can use to cleanse your home or your space. And really, you can add roses to just about any spell or ritual, and they have a place there. Even the thorns can be used in spells where you want someone to get away from you or where you want to end a relationship. So that's why we're going to talk about a little rose ritual today. So this ritual is from my new book, Green Witchcraft. I can't believe I can say that. It's very exciting. So my new book, Green Witchcraft, A Practical Guide to Discovering the Magic of Plants, Herbs, Crystals, and Beyond by Paige Vanderbeck, which is coming out February 25th. That's a Tuesday. It's in less than 2 weeks. How exciting. So this is on page 72, and it is the Rainbow Rose Ritual for Self-Love. Like I said, the only magical item you really need is 6 fresh roses, and I'm going to explain why in a moment. But beyond that, all you'll need is some time to yourself where you can have the bed and the bedroom to yourself and you won't be disturbed. That is really going to be the hardest one for some of you to get a hold of, I'm sure. So in the language of flowers, each color of the rose has a specific meaning, and as does the size of the bouquet. And actually, in the language of flowers, which is very interesting, all flowers that we give as gifts or that we see, they all mean something a little bit different when we give them to somebody. So you're going to use 6 because 6 roses represents the need that we all have to be loved and cherished. Now, the point of this spell is to remind you that you don't need anyone else but you, yourself, to shower you with love. You don't need to have another person on Valentine's Day to show yourself love or luxury as a fun extra. You can do this yourself. So you're going to get 6 fresh roses. You want 1 in blue or lavender, 1 in white, 1 in pink, 1 in yellow, 1 in orange, and finally, 1 in a really nice deep red. So to begin, you're going to make your bed up exactly the way you like it, all nice and comfortable, throw all the pillows you like on there, and bring your roses into your room and close the door. Grab your blue or purple rose and detach the petals from the stem so that you just have a handful of rose petals. And just set the stem aside for now. Sprinkle the petals all over your bed and say, "I am enchanting." Blue or lavender roses represent enchantment. And that is a very specific word. It's not just magic, it's enchantment. It's using your own glamour to cast a spell, basically. And you're going to continue with each one of your roses, saving red for last. So with white, you can say, "This is a new beginning for me." With pink, you say, "I am beautiful and my heart is open." With yellow, you say, "I'm my own best friend and a great friend to others." With your orange petals, you say, "I'm constantly energized by the love that I have for myself." And finally, with your deep dark red, "I love myself even when others don't. I can love myself unconditionally." Then you lie down on your bed of roses and you revel in their beauty. Take this time to love yourself. You can do this nude, you can leave your clothes on, and you can spend as much time there as you like. Now that is incredibly simple, right? From there, it's up to you to show yourself some love in whatever way you feel most comfortable with. Now, one thing I did mention here Right down at the bottom, there's a little optional. You can also get rainbow-dyed roses. So if you can't get a rose in every single color, you can get rainbow-dyed roses. Though those of you who are on the LGBTQIA spectrum can then find some secondary symbolism in having that rainbow rose. If you do that, just I want to warn you, those are dyed roses, the rainbow ones. So the dye can come out on your clothes or your bed. You just want to make sure you're not wearing anything white when you do that. But what this does is use the magic of color and roses and the scent of roses to really get you into this place of thinking about yourself, thinking about the things you love about yourself, thinking about your positive qualities, and taking time to just enjoy who you are. When I wrote this ritual, I had something kind of specific in mind, but it's more I had something specific in mind for myself for conducting the ritual on my own. Every single one of the spells and the rituals in this book, they're all almost complete. The only thing that's missing is what you yourself bring to the spells and the rituals. These are going to look different every single time anyone performs any of them. Or so I hope. I think magic can be a very deeply personal experience, and I really like that. So when I created this ritual, in my head, I was thinking of the book Crystal Healing and Sacred Pleasure by Vanessa Cuccia, who is the founder of Shock Rubs, the crystal sex toy company. I actually reviewed this book on the blog already. I gave it 5 crystal balls out of 5, but I never talked about it on the show just because I was waiting for Valentine's Day, to be honest. Crystal Healing and Sacred Pleasure is an absolutely beautiful book. It's a beautiful book that you can just look through and you'll love it. But the information inside it is fantastic. She talks a lot about the power of different crystals. She talks about each of your chakras, and she talks about pleasure, sensual pleasure, sexual pleasure, pleasure with other people, and pleasure by yourself. She has lots of recommendations for exercises you can do with crystals, whether they're shock rubs or something that you already have, like a palm stone, to do these different rituals that activate and open and cleanse and clear your chakras, as well as recipes to make crystal massage oils and elixirs, and lots of personal stories about trauma and pain and love and happiness and relationships that make the book very relatable. The entire book is about healing. It's about healing your feelings about sex, about love, and about yourself and your body. I found it to be an incredibly body positive book. And when I wrote this rainbow rose ritual, I really imagined that from there, that could be a point where you could use some of the rituals that you find in a book like Crystal Healing and Sacred Pleasure. So if you are someone who has a shock rub or some other crystal sex toy, the Rainbow Rose ritual, great precursor to that kind of thing. You can also do the ritual in your bathtub and put the rose petals into your bathtub and kind of give yourself a sensual experience that way. Since rose as a magical plant has the ability to cleanse and clear and balance our chakras for us, I thought it was a great way to combine these two kind of practices to, you know, really give yourself a sensual experience. One of the exercises in particular that I thought of is called the Bells of the Heart, which is a heart chakra exercise. Now, of course, there are some ones that sound like a lot more fun that involve masturbation or working with your clitoris. Awesome. Highly recommend. But this one, this Bells of the Heart exercise is probably my favorite one in the book. It's one that I felt the most deeply when I tried it out. I actually used some rose oil and my rose quartz wand to massage the entire area of my chest, my breasts, and my shoulders, because they just get so sore, probably from holding up my breasts, but that's just life, right? But I really used the energy of rose already in that ritual, in that massage, and that has become kind of a regular part of any time I'm really feeling stuck, like I'm not accessing my emotions, like I'm not expressing my emotions very well. I will take some time to lay down by myself and, you know, grab my rose oil and my rose quartz and give myself a little massage and focus on opening and clearing out that area. The heart is a very difficult area for me. It sounds like I'm someone who's very comfortable expressing very private emotions, but if you were sitting here right in front of me, all I would be talking about is the weather. So I found crystal healing and sacred pleasure really helped me open up a little bit more, really helped me get comfortable feeling very intense rushes of emotion. And this Bells of the Heart exercise really was my favorite. I tried out every single ritual and spell that I wrote for the book before solidifying it. And I can say with absolute certainty that grabbing yourself these six fresh roses in these different colors and, you know, grabbing a rose quartz and this rose oil to treat yourself, to, you know, just to touch yourself, feel your skin, feel your body. If you can look at yourself in the mirror from your angle, that's fantastic too. Just really enjoy the person you are. And some of that can be very physical, and some of it is also going to be very mental and emotional. It's a very good combination, and it feels very cleansing and healing. And afterwards, I just felt like I'd just been to a $1 million spa. My whole body, my being just felt much more open and much more calm and clear. And I gotta say, for the next couple weeks, it was like my makeup was constantly on point, and like all of my perfume, just you could smell it everywhere without it being overpowering. Like I just felt like I was the sexiest person in the whole world for a little while. So check out Crystal Healing and Sacred Pleasure. That is another 5 crystal ball out of 5 book, and also quite perfect for Valentine's Day. If you are looking to learn more about chakras and more about stones in kind of the general sense, this book has an amazing amount of information. Now, most of it is tied back to sensuality and sexuality and, you know, that kind of journey. But I find myself grabbing this book all the time when I want to learn more about a particular chakra or about particular crystals that I know work with those chakras that she's mentioned in here. I found more information about chakras that was much more relatable and much easier to understand in this book than I have in any other. So I highly recommend it. Now, if you guys are interested in the Rainbow Rose ritual, I will be putting up a list of the roses, the colors, and exactly what they mean so that you guys can reference that in the future. Now, if you get your 6 roses of all these different colors and you associate different things with them, maybe enchantment isn't the word you think of with a blue or purple rose, or maybe orange is something you use for attraction or road opening. Maybe white is something that stands for purity or virtue. You know, everybody has different ideas. Go with whatever you feel and what makes you feel best. What matters is there's no guilt, no hating on yourself, no hating on your body, no hating on your heart, your relationship history, the dates you've been on, no hating on any of it. It's all about loving yourself and treating yourself and taking time to be alone with yourself and really get to know yourself on that deep soulular, I almost regret saying that now, on a deeper soulular level. There you have it, friends. A Fat Feminist Witch Valentine's Day spectacular. We've got love, we've got self-love, we've got hilarious mythology, we've got healing, healing trauma, astrology, a deck of cards, and 2 to 3 books, depending on how you look at it. So, I think it's time now that we can all depart and enjoy our Valentine's Day weekend. Because, you know, with it being on a Friday, we're all going to milk it just a little bit more. I know I personally will be eating a lot of heart-shaped candy this weekend. Maybe I'll grab roses and heart-shaped candy. There's not going to be any roses left. Who am I kidding? Not at my little flower shop anyways. Thank you so much for joining me today for this episode of The Fat Feminist Witch. If you want to find out more about me, about any of the topics or books I discussed today, you can do that at thefatfeministwitch.com. You can find me across social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, even Pinterest, just by searching The Fat Feminist Witch. It'll be me pretty much every time. If you want to support the podcast, you can do that by going to patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch and join the private monthly membership group, The Witch and Bitch. You can also go to my website and click Buy Me a Coffee to make a small one-time donation. Or you can pre-order Green Witchcraft by Paige Vanderbeck anywhere that you like to pre-order books. It comes out February 25th, and if you pre-order it, that means you will be getting your copy just a little bit earlier than the people who wait. I have it on pretty good authority that the book is great, and it's going to be sold out for a while. That's my prediction. I'm very proud of my book. I really hope you guys like it. It definitely supports me if you go out and pre-order the book. Also, if you have a local witchy shop where you prefer to buy things like this, I fully encourage you to go into that shop with information about the book and ask them if they can order it for you. If they're curious and they don't know how to find it, they can go to my website, thefatfeministwitch.com/greenwitchcraft, and I have the information there so that they should be able to order copies for you. And you can buy it and support your local witchy shops. I am also doing something very fun on release day on my Facebook page. I am going live around noon on Facebook. I will be going live to have a little lunchtime launch party. I'm going to share some stuff from the book. I've got signed copies to give away. And I'm going to be demonstrating another spell from the book, one that is just a little bit more involved and has lots of very fun stuff. So I hope you guys can make it to my Facebook page and tune in for that on Tuesday at noon. Right after you go out and buy the book, of course. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you all have a fantastic weekend and have a beautiful and loving Valentine's Day.